Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris, and on today's episode, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Lori Mintz. Before we dive in, let me remind you to come on over to pleasuremechanics.com for our complete podcast archive, and go to pleasuremechanics.com/free to sign up for the Erotic Essentials, our free mini course delivered straight to your inbox. When you're ready to master new erotic skills, including those we will speak about on this episode, check out our mastery courses and use the code SPEAKINGOFSEX for 20% off the course of your choice. So today we welcome Dr. Lori Mintz. She's a tenured professor at the University of Florida, where she teaches the psychology of human sexuality to hundreds of undergraduate students each year. Dr. Mintz has published over 50 research articles in academic journals and 6 chapters in academic books. She also writes a popular blog and has a small private therapy practice. Her professional goal is to provide scientifically accurate sex-positive information to enhance female pleasure. Dr. Mintz's first book was A Tired Woman's Guide to Passionate Sex, Reclaim Your Desire and Reignite Your Relationship. And today, we're going to dive into her new book, Becoming Clitorate, Why Orgasm Equality Matters and How to Get It. Dr. Lori Mintz, welcome to Speaking of Sex.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
We have so much to talk about. I'm so excited. Before we start, I do want to say that we're going to be talking a lot about the clitoris and a female body. And I want to acknowledge that while we talk about women as a general category of people who have a clitoris, some people who have a clitoris identify as men, and some people who identify as women don't have a clitoris, and there's lots of genderqueer people in between. So while our language is limited, our intention is inclusive, and everyone who has a human body will gain valuable wisdom and insight from this conversation. So, Dr. Mintz, what is the orgasm gap, and why did it motivate you to write this book?
Well, the orgasm gap is the fact, and first of all, can I back up and say how glad that I am that you are giving that introduction about language, because that's something I really struggled with when I wrote the book, and I really do want this to be inclusive for everyone. So thank you for saying that and bringing that up. In terms of the orgasm gap, it is the finding in multiple studies that women are having far fewer orgasms than are men. And in relationship sex, for example, the average is that a man will have 3 orgasms to every female orgasm. Wow. And if that weren't bad enough, when we talk about casual sex or hookup sex, things get even worse. In multiple years of my Psychology of Human Sexuality class, I take surveys, anonymous surveys with it's called iClicker technology. And basically what I find is when I ask my students, how often do you orgasm during first time hookup sex, during including activities in which you could orgasm, since the term hookup is very vague, this is staggering to me. 55% of the men say yes versus 4% of the women.
Wow.
So there's just a huge gap, and that was my motivation for writing Becoming Clitorate, is to give people the information to close that gap and make orgasms an equal opportunity event.
Yeah, and so anecdotally, we know that women's orgasms are harder to come by. And is this just because women's bodies are oh so complicated, or is there something wrong with how we're thinking about sex in the first place that culturally creates this orgasm gap?
I believe it is cultural, and that's why my book is a combination of cultural analysis and self-help to examine why do we have this problem, and then how can we solve this problem.
So how are we thinking about sex wrong?
Well, it's a very male-centered way of thinking about sex. If even the word sex, let's start there.
Yeah.
When we hear the word sex in our culture, it is used synonymous with intercourse. And that is how women think they should orgasm, because especially if they're getting their sex ed from mainstream movies or porn, what you see is women having fast and fabulous orgasms from intercourse alone. Uh-huh. And that is a lie. That I call that in the book the number one lie about getting laid, that most women, the vast majority, do not orgasm from thrusting alone. So that's the basis of the lie. But then there's so many other cultural factors that are also relevant. Our lack of sex ed that includes pleasure. We don't learn about the clitoris, which is the primary sex orgasm organ in women, in any of our sex ed. Women are socialized to sort of be more concerned about how they look and appear than how they feel. No one teaches sex communication. Mm. So there's so many cultural reasons that are the culprit in the orgasm gap. And it's not because women are so complicated. Certainly, I think, you know, what every woman needs to orgasm is different because every woman's genital nerves are positioned differently. But if you know what you need and you have communication skills, it makes it not that complex. And, you know, lesbian women are not having, or women who have sex with women don't have the orgasm gap. So to me, that speaks volumes to this is a cultural issue.
So are you saying women who have sex with women have more orgasms than women who have sex with men?
Yes, significantly more. There's not an that when women have sex with women, they pretty much, you know, over 90% orgasm. Same with when women pleasure themselves, about 94% orgasm. But when we add a penis in the equation, that number plummets.
Okay, but I do want to say, so this isn't an attack on men. It's an attack on our culture that denies us all more pleasure, because men are put under a lot of pressure too from this equation of thinking that they have to last longer in bed, that it's all about their penis size. There's so much suffering on both sides of this equation, right?
Absolutely. And I was very, very adamant and careful in the book to not do any male blaming or male bashing. And I don't blame men. And I specifically say men are subject to the same pressures. And in fact, becoming clitorate benefits men because they can take that pressure away from the falsehood of lasting long, thrusting hard. And I actually have a chapter in the book for men called You Don't Have to Have a Clitoris to Be Clitorate.
Yeah.
You know, where I actually do talk to them about the benefits of clitoracy for them.
And I really love how you emphasize what we find, too, is that men who are in relationships with women want nothing more than to give pleasure and to see their women happy. And they're not these selfish monsters we make them out to be. It's just about finding the strategies for both giving and receiving pleasure.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it any better. That's exactly how I feel and what I believe.
So one of the features of this book that I love is really going into the anatomy of the clitoris, and that it's not just the tip of the iceberg we see, but there's a deep internal structure, and how we can stimulate all parts of the clitoris. I want to get your opinion on this, because I've been fiddling with this idea, because we talk about women want direct clitoral stimulation, but that doesn't always mean direct on the glands of the clitoris, on the very head where it's most sensitive, right?
Exactly. And in fact, we should be talking about clitoral vulva stimulation.
Yes.
but, you know, and in fact, there's a point in the book where I say, that's what I mean. Because basically every woman, as I said, their nerves are positioned differently. For some women, touching the hood of the clitoris, even to stimulate the glands below, is too intense, and they need stimulation, say, through their panties or the inner lips actually attached to the clitoral glands and hood in two places, and stimulating the inner lips, which are actually chock full of nerves and analogous to the head of the man's penis. You know, that stimulates the clitoris. So the clitoris, some people even say we should be calling all of women's genital anatomy the clitoris, because it's all interconnected. And exactly, that doesn't mean just going for the glands or the hood. Absolutely.
I wrote in the notes of my book, advanced clitoracy, like knowing where all of the parts of your clitoris are and being able to say specifically, like, I like when you stimulate my clitoris through the labia, and having that language is so important.
Absolutely. And that's really another place where the orgasm gap is fueled, is in our language, because, you know, in sex ed, all that people learn about is the vagina. That is it. And we call all of women's anatomy the vagina, which, you know, I'm not saying that intercourse is not pleasurable, but it is just not how most women reach orgasm. So even our language and our lack of language really obscures women's orgasmic capacity and pleasure.
Do you get upset as I do when you hear people call their entire genitals the vagina?
Oh, I get really upset about that. I get upset when I hear that. I get upset when I hear people talking about, like, articles that give the best sex position for her orgasm and don't even mention the clitoris and are just talking about orgasm, intercourse. I get so upset about all of it. It's once you see this language, it's so all around you. It's so hard not to get upset.
One of the things I love about the book is you give new scripts for pleasure. You kind of point out that so many of us have a script that's, you know, kissing, a little bit of foreplay, going right into intercourse, and how this formula doesn't allow many women, many people with clitorises to have the pleasure that they seek. And you give different kind of play-by-play ideas for how to restructure, reformulate the sex act. I think that's brilliant. One of the things that I noticed is you start each script with about 20 minutes of fooling around. Mm-hmm. Why is that phase important?
Well, that phase is important because that warm up, and I'm talking about not even, that's before we even get into touching genitals. Uh-huh. And I'm not saying that it has to happen every time. I mean, sometimes that'll be less than 20 minutes, sometimes more, but it takes women a time to get aroused, and that's full body arousal, and to lubricate and just get into the idea, oh, this is going to be really arousing and fun. And sadly, research shows that in encounters between men and women, the average amount of time spent on any kind of warm-up before it's right to touching genitals, which might even not be wet at that point for women, is 5 minutes. And so I really wanted to emphasize that that warm-up is very, very important.
And so dipping into your therapy background a little bit, what would you say to women who find it hard to receive touch, who find it hard to stay present in their body, to enjoy stimulation, and kind of want to rush through sex just to get it over with?
Well, I would, and I've met with many women who have that feeling that I just want to get this over with, and I need to rush through it. I take too long. And, you know, what I would find, what I often do is sort of a combination of normalizing, providing information, coupled with teaching some skills. So normalizing information that it takes an average woman 20 minutes of vulva and clitoral stimulation to reach an orgasm, as much as 45 for some. That is normal. It's not something to be like ashamed of or, oh, I'm taking too long. Mm-hmm. And so women understanding that, but then teaching both mindfulness, which is so important, which is the ability to stay present in one's body, and sexual communication skills. Those two skills will help a woman relax, enjoy touch, and take the time that she needs to become orgasmic.
Yes. Yes. And then so after those 20 minutes of full body touch, we love couples massage as a warm up. You then go on to lay out all of these options, and there's kind of pages and pages of options, which I was reading in a coffee shop and I was kind of getting delighted by. But one of the things you emphasize is that intercourse doesn't have to be the punctuation. You can have intercourse first and then move on to other activities. You can do oral sex and finger play first and then have intercourse. How important is it to, we call it decentralize intercourse in the sex act? Is that a really essential skill for couples for their long-term pleasure?
It is absolutely is essential, and that is really a major point of the book, both from the language to those plays you're talking about, which I'm delighted that you enjoyed so much.
Yes.
Because they really, we really have, like you said, that one cultural script, you know, a little bit of foreplay to get her ready, intercourse, his orgasm, maybe her faked orgasm, sex over. And there are so many more ways to play that out that involve intercourse but don't make it the main event, or that don't even involve intercourse at all. So I'm really thrilled that you enjoyed those plays.
Gosh, it's just so important, I think, especially long-term relationships, because what you enjoy and what your body can do changes. Like, I'm just on the other side of a chronic illness, and just noticing how much my body changed just from being sick for about a year. And to be resilient in a relationship, we have to have that flexibility. And as we age, like, there's so many things that change in our bodies, and how we have sex has to be one of them.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I'm sorry that you've dealt with an illness for so long, and I wish you healing and recovery.
Thank you.
Yeah. I know that's very hard, and what you say is so important for us, because all of us will be in that place at some point or another. I have a friend who works in the rehab field and says we are all temporarily able-bodied.
Yes.
And that we all have to prepare ourselves for bodily changes, and that doesn't mean that sex, you know, and I'm saying sex broadly, needs to change. But what it requires is an absolute comfort and attunement to your own body, your own needs, and the ability to communicate with your partner, and lifelong learning about how your body changes, how your needs change, how your partner's needs change. So all of that is so important.
So as we unfurl this as a culture, as women get more clitorate and start learning how to enjoy orgasms from different kind of stimulation, there seems to be, and you echoed this in the book so beautifully, that there's still a strange hierarchy of orgasms. That, like, if you have to bring a vibrator into bed, it doesn't count as much, or it's lesser than, and that this kind of simultaneous orgasm during intercourse is the ultimate holy grail of sex. What do you say to that belief system?
Bullshit, basically. there is this crazy hierarchy. If you can have an orgasm from thrusting alone at the same time as your partner, as you say, that's number one. Thrusting alone, number two, even if it's not at the same time. And then, you know, oral sex. And if you can have it with clitoral stimulation plus intercourse together, they call that like assisted intercourse. Like, there's something wrong with it, you know? That's the next best. And then, oh no, those poor women who need direct vulval clitoral stimulation, you know, and can't orgasm with intercourse. Or some women I talk to say they find the feeling of a penis in their vagina distracting. You know, they really need just complete focus on themselves. And that's, of course, you know, they're down there in the hierarchy, and as you say, a vibrator. And to me, that is just complete and utter hogwash. And it is really one of those notions that is truly, truly goes way back to Freud and differentiating clitoral and vaginal orgasms, declaring one immature. And it has been holding women up ever since in terms of looking for the ultimate orgasm instead of getting to know their own bodies and having orgasms the way their own body works best.
And so this is a question we get a lot from women of, is there a difference of clitoral orgasms and vaginal orgasms and cervical orgasms and squirting orgasms? And people are always looking for kind of a taxonomy of orgasms. What does the research show us? What does the biology show us? Is an orgasm, or are they sourced from different nerves?
Well, interestingly, and I dedicate about three paragraphs to this in the book, but what I'm summarizing is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of studies in three paragraphs. My answer to that, although I'd be very interested in your beliefs, because you're, you know, equally an expert in this, my honest answer is scientists are still debating.
Yeah.
There's one camp that says because the nerves from the vagina and the clitoris go up the spinal cord to the brain by different pathways and some other reasonings that, yes, these are different. Plus, some women say they feel different. There's other people that are saying, you know, they are not different. They're all clitoral because we should consider the entire network of nerves clitoral. My honest answer is, I don't really see why it matters. And I think I think it does matter scientifically and especially medically if you're trying to help women, for example, who've had spinal cord injuries, orgasm. But attention to the question itself is what sets up that hierarchy. And again, this isn't not male bashing, it's cultural bashing. All this attention is differentiating different types of female orgasms. We don't talk about, for men, well, there's a hand job orgasm and a blowjob orgasm and an inner penis, you know, orgasm and a prostate orgasm. Like, there isn't that attention to this. When we talk about female orgasms, we go to this whole difference equals deficit model. Like, if there are different ones, then we have to declare one best. So mm-hmm. I have a sort of concern with the question itself and the attention it gets in the media.
Amen. I wholeheartedly agree. And I think, again, looking at the men and the women together and just looking at the human sexual system, what we've noticed is that there's kind of a galaxy of orgasms, both in intensity, in where you feel them, in how you feel them. And that just becomes a place to play and experiment. And again, if you have a whole repertoire of different ways you can orgasm and climax and enjoy sex, the world opens up and you're not searching for the Holy Grail. You're bathing in it, you know? You're
kind of just surrounded. I love what you just said, that there is a galaxy. And, you know, every orgasm might feel a little bit different. Yeah. And it opens up experimentation. And at the same time, I would also say, if you're a person who can truly only orgasm with one very unique kind of stimulation, even, you know, no matter how you get that, if it's this specific vibrator in this specific position, if it works every time, that's okay too. Yeah. That is a-okay too. That however your body works is the best way.
Yeah, you manage the kind of paradoxes of all of this so well in the book. And one thing you really handle well is this idea that orgasms are important, but they don't have to be the goal. And that pleasure is really the goal and whatever that looks like to you. Can you talk a little bit about that? Of like, because I struggle with this too, of orgasms do matter to me, but I don't want to become so goal-centric that we struggle to have orgasms, because the more we try to have them, the harder they are to have. And it's a funny loop to get into.
It really is, especially, you know, and that's why I love the title for you, that you're pleasure mechanics, you're not orgasm mechanics, yes. You know? And so I think, again, we're back to language matters, and it was a paradox I struggled with, because so many of my students are so distressed about not being able to orgasm, and so I did want to write this book to provide analysis of why and solutions, and at the same time, anything that puts you in your head when you're having a sexual encounter rather than in your body, like, am I going to come? Am I taking too long to come? Oh my gosh, I got to come, takes you away from your body and it defeats the purpose. So I do repeatedly say in the book, I'm doing this to help you orgasm, but any focus on an orgasm itself is going to be a problem. So it is a paradox that we need to just, you know, talk about directly. So I'm so glad that you raised that.
And another thing I love is when you talk about the kind of intercourse we should all be having, meaning conversation.
Mm-hmm. I loved that. When I first learned that the word intercourse actually means communication, yeah. I was just delighted with that, because that is what is so needed. And people have been told to be so afraid to talk about sex and have sexual conversations. And you cannot solve any problem without conversation or enhance a relationship without conversation. And that just extends into sexual conversations.
And then you point out that sometimes actually in the sex act, in bed is not the best place to have conversations. And you give ideas for kitchen table conversations and long drive conversations. I think that's really brilliant.
Oh, thank you. Yes. I mean, I do think that some communication needs to happen in the bed, like, you know, softer, harder there, yeah. You know, or I'd like this, would you like this? But really long problem solving, enhancing talks like, hey, I have this fantasy. I'm a little scared to tell you, but what do you think? Or I'd like us to do this differently. Those difficult conversations should happen outside of the bedroom, using those really sound communication skills that I wish we taught everyone in school, just like I wish we taught them about pleasure. But unfortunately, we don't teach enough of either.
Yeah, and you dedicate a whole section to the book about how to talk well and how to own your own emotions. And I love how the kind of therapy part of you and the sex reacher part of you all came together in this book.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I did. I actually have said to people, I feel like this book is the climax of my career.
Well, we can have multiple orgasms and we can have multiple climaxes.
Exactly. But I think you're right. I did try to put the person in me that is very engaged in cultural analysis and the therapist and the researcher and the mother. Like this book is, I feel like this book is for our daughters, you know. So thank you for saying that. It means a lot to me.
And if you could just telepathically broadcast one message to the world to change sex culture for the better, what would it be?
Gosh, that is a great question. I only got one message in one sentence. I really should make it count. I would say get to know your own body and then learn to express that need to your partner. And again, there is no right way to have sex, or that whatever your body wants and needs is the right way, and get rid of all those cultural shoulds when it comes to what you need for pleasure and orgasm.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So definitely check out the book, Becoming Clitorate, Why Orgasm Equality Matters and How to Get It. It belongs on your bedside table. Dr. Lori Mintz, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
So we will link up to your website and to the book on the show notes page over at pleasuremechanics.com. And we will bring you back to speak more. We could go on for hours, I think.
Oh, I do think so, too. I so enjoyed this. Thank you.
Beautiful. So we hope you have enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Lori Mintz about becoming clitorate. I definitely recommend the book. It was a lot of fun to read, and I read a lot of books about sex, so that's saying something. And when you are ready to master the physical skills of clitoracy, all of the different ways of stimulating the clitoris, the entire vulva, the internal structures of the clitoris, putting it all together for maximum pleasure, definitely check out our Foreplay Mastery course. The video guides on how to touch the female sexual system is just one cornerstone of that course. We also share all of our favorite techniques for touching the penis and the male sexual system. And having the skills of fingering and hand jobs definitely opens up a huge range of fulfilling, satisfying, highly orgasmic, pleasurable ways to touch one another so you don't become as reliant on intercourse, and so intercourse can become much more orgasmic when you do want to have it. Check out the course at pleasuremechanics.com, and to celebrate this episode and to help you all become more clitorate and penis literate, I don't know what the word for that would be, we would like to offer you a special discount of 30% off the Foreplay Mastery course using the promo code CLIT, C-L-I-T. Put that in at checkout and you will get 30% off this course, and you can start expanding your own sexual horizons by following along with our video guides and listening to the audio guides and taking advantage of the full multimedia resources available to you in that course. It's our best-selling course for a reason. It's fabulous and phenomenal, and I definitely recommend you check it out. Go to pleasuremechanics.com, check out the Foreplay Mastery course, use the code CLIT, CLIT for a 30% off discount on this course only. And we will be back with you next week with a new podcast episode. I'm Chris from PleasureMechanics.com, wishing you a lifetime of pleasure. Cheers.